Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 42 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com, Cornerstone Bank, building a trust on a solid foundation. And History Nebraska, who believe history is more than a list of dates. It's the foundation for a better future told through stories about the past. The future begins at HistoryNebraska.gov.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. In about 15 minutes or so, we'll learn about a bright young string quartet playing in Lincoln this Tuesday. Also later, I'll have a conversation about a community orchestra giving a concert in North Platte. And the Five Browns are performing in Scottsbluff. If you haven't heard of them or seen them play, five pianos on one stage, all siblings. I'll have a conversation with one of those siblings in about 7 minutes. And if you'll be away from your radio at some point this hour, don't miss a minute of the conversation. Listen using the NET Nebraska mobile app or stream at your computer at netnebraska.org. We'll start this morning with Brian Fultner from the Arts for the Soul series, as well as Chris Marks from the Lincoln Organ Showcase series. The two organizations are collaborating to present a concert featuring organist Ken Cowan this Sunday at 3 p.m. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about Ken Cowan, your guest musician.
Ken's a terrific young concert organist, and one of his specialties actually is playing transcriptions of orchestral music on organs, and he's doing two of those this Sunday. So the Wagner Overture to the Flying Dutchman and the Saint-Saëns Danse Macabre, and playing them on this terrific organ at First Presbyterian, which is really good for playing orchestral music. So if you've never heard one organist playing an entire orchestral score all by himself, it's well worth hearing.
Yeah, I watched a couple videos of him playing, and it is impressive always to me to watch organists do the dance that you guys do. You're an organist, Chris, so
I am,
you know.
Yes.
But his footwork, you know, it's nice when they take the camera and they just position it right down by the feet.
Absolutely.
Does he do his own transcriptions, do you know?
Sometimes, yes. One of the Saint-Saëns, I believe, is his, and he also plays published transcriptions from other arrangers.
Now, does this concert wrap up seasons for both of your organizations for this season?
It is our final concert of the Arts for the Soul season, yes.
Okay.
And for Lincoln Organ Showcase as well, yes.
So kind of a big finale in this collaboration. What are the benefits, would you say, of, you know, for either organization of collaborating on a concert like this?
Well, combining our resources allows us to bring in people that we might not otherwise be able to, and it makes it a lot more fun to work together and bring in some really big name people, and I would say Ken is one of those.
Helps put audiences together, too. We hope to catch a wider group of people than we might normally be able to separately.
Yeah. If there are people listening who are presenters or from other organizations who think, maybe we're going to do a collaboration, too, with someone nearby, do you have any advice for putting together a joint concert?
Find nice people to work with. That's good.
For sure.
Right.
But Lincoln's a great place to make those collaborations happen, so yeah. It's been great.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this particular concert or any previews you want to give of next season, since this is a finale for both
of you? Well, we're not able to announce anything for next year yet. We're still working on finalizing that. I don't know about Organ Showcase.
Likewise, we're getting there, but we're not quite there. But
all right.
I guess just come see Ken play. It's really terrific.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good. The featured soloist this Sunday at 3 p.m. is Ken Cowan. That concert is a collaboration between Lincoln Organ Showcase and the Arts for the Soul series. Cowan plays at First Presbyterian Church in Lincoln, and we'll have a link to more details right on the Friday Live page. My guests have been Brian Fultner and Christopher Marks. Congrats on finishing out two great seasons.
Thank you.
Radio you want, wherever you need it, across Nebraska. This is NET Radio and netnebraska.org.
Thank you.
The historic Midwest Theater in Scottsbluff will host the Five Browns for a performance on Tuesday, April 9th at 7:30 p.m. The group of five siblings, all pianists who all attended the Juilliard School simultaneously, will return to the Midwest after their last appearance there 6 years ago. The New York Post has proclaimed one family, five pianos, and 50 fingers add up to the biggest classical music sensation in years. One of those five joins me right now. Melody Brown, such a pleasure to meet you.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
So what kind of repertoire are you all touring with for this upcoming show?
It's all classical. We're doing the Rhapsody in Blue, which is one of our most requested pieces on five pianos. So you'll see five pianos on the stage. And a lot of people have referred to it as almost like an orchestra of pianos. Crossover would be the Star Wars, which we have an amazing arrangement done by an amazing composer, and it's going to just be really fun. And then we have things like Stravinsky's Firebird, and then there's going to be solos and duos, so we all kind of change up on the stage.
There are a limited number of pieces arranged for five pianos, so who does the arranging?
One of them is Jeffrey Shumway, who was a part of the American Piano Quartet, and he was used to writing for multiple pianos, so he's done some fabulous arrangements for us. And then another one is a fabulous pianist himself, Greg Anderson, who we did a lot of our scoring with at Juilliard. And he's just so used to writing for multiple pianos since he's in a duo piano team himself. And so he has done some fabulous arrangements for us, one of them being the Star Wars.
So speaking of music for five pianos, you all commissioned a five-piano concerto from composer Nico Muhly, and then you premiered that at the 2011 Ravinia Festival. Can you talk a little about that experience?
It was definitely challenging to play one of Muhly's pieces. In general, requires a lot of rhythmic stability. And since he wanted to sort of show what five pianos, since they're percussive instruments, what they could do rhythmically, he definitely challenged us in ways that we had never been challenged before. And then you add an orchestra of 50 people on top of it, it becomes a very difficult piece. We actually just played it again just a couple of weeks ago in Texas. First of all, it seems to get better because each one kind of can build on the recordings that have been made in the past. So having a recording actually really helps with the conductors and orchestras and everything. Now it's gotten even more smooth, and it's just a really, really exciting piece with some really beautiful moments that Nico's written in. So yeah, it's a really fun one to play.
So Melody, when all of you are on tour, what pianos are you using? Because I'm wondering kind of about the logistics of either having to find pianos on location or hauling them with you seems like a lot.
It's kind of a combination of all of the above. Sometimes if we're on a longer tour, then there will be five that come with us from New York. Steinway will have five 9-foot grands traveling the country with us. But if we're on a tour that's kind of skipping around a lot, like this next one where we'll be in Nebraska and then we'll be in Wisconsin, it gets a little more challenging to bring them out from New York. So it's easier to actually bring them in from the local Steinway dealers. And so sometimes that, I don't know where that will be in the Nebraska area, where they're coming from, but that's what management takes care of for us. And then a lot of times concert venues will have, you know, up to two, so we'll use their two and then bring in three, you know, so it's just a combination of a lot of different happenings going on.
So when I was younger, my sister and I enjoyed playing a book of very simple piano duos, but that was for one piano, and it made me think about range. When you have five different people playing all 88 keys, does any one of you kind of get stuck in a certain section of the keyboard, one person playing bass more than the others? I'm kind of curious texturally about those arrangements.
It would be easy just to fall into these composers just writing, oh, you get all the bass or timpani parts or, you know. But truthfully, they really try hard, and we tell them beforehand to sort of spread it all around. So not everybody's getting, you know, the string section or the percussive section or the woodwinds, because, you know, most of these pieces are orchestral pieces that we're having arranged. And so, you know, sometimes there will be, like, for instance, when we played Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, Ryan is the back piano, and he has, like, all of the, a lot of the big timpani parts. And sometimes it does fall that way, but for the most part, our composers try really hard to spread it around.
So you all grew up playing piano. Do you remember being little and kind of looking up to Desiree, Deandra, and Gregory and hearing them play when you were little?
Oh, my goodness. I do remember a little bit of that, but funny enough, Gregory, who's just above me, he's the middle sibling, he actually, his first memory is of a week before his third birthday and thinking, oh, my goodness, when I get to turn three, then I get to start taking piano lessons like Desiree and Deandra. And so he remembers being super excited about that and just looking up to them. I don't have memories that young. We're always counting on Gregory to have the better memory of the group. And so he definitely remembers that. And obviously we've been told that we were similar in how we wanted to be doing the same thing our older sisters were doing as well.
Well, Melody, welcome back to Nebraska for another performance this week. It's really been great talking with you.
Oh, well, thank you. We're excited to come back.
Melody Brown and her four siblings are the Five Browns, all five of them pianists. They return to Scotts Bluff for a performance at the historic Midwest Theater, and that's on Tuesday, April 9th at 7:30 p.m. And for more about the concert, you can link through to the Midwest website on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. The creation of icons is a process that goes back hundreds of years, using primarily materials sourced from nature.
The materials used are all natural materials. Basically, I use egg tempera, which is mixed with the egg yolk emulsion with a little bit of wine. The rest of the iconography is basically with natural pigments from all over the world, like lapis, lazuli, and malachite, and all these pigments come from different areas.
Here a conversation with Omaha artist Jane Tancredi about an exhibition of her work, as well as a conversation with cast and crew from the next theatrics production. That's all on this week's Friday Live Extra. Download wherever you get your podcasts or listen on our website at netnebraska.org/radio. This is Friday Live, coming to you from the Mill in downtown Lincoln on NET Radio. Lincoln Friends of Chamber Music presents the Diderot String Quartet next Tuesday at the Johnny Carson Theater in Lincoln. LFCM board member Sophia Potter is here this morning to talk about this concert. Good morning, Sophia.
Good morning.
Who's in this ensemble, and what's the background of this quartet a little bit?
So the Diderot String Quartet is a newer quartet, so if you have not heard of them yet, get ready, because I think you'll be hearing a lot more about them. They are four really incredible musicians who all have a background in what in the classical music industry we call historical performance. And actually, it so happens that I was at my undergraduate institution with three of the four of them. I can attest to the fact that 12 years ago they were all wonderful players, and I'm certain that it's only gotten better. I know that at least one or two of them also play with Apollo's Fire, the Baroque orchestra.
And they are playing on period instruments
for
this concert.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I wondered about the name, too. Do you know who they're named after and why?
Well, I know I know that they're named after Denise Diderot, but I could not tell you a whole lot more about that. So I would encourage the audience to look up why they're named that.
There you go. So what's the repertoire for this concert?
It's a very meat and potatoes chamber music program. And, of course, if you're playing on historical instruments, you probably want to be playing pieces that were written during that same era. So they'll be playing Haydn Opus 20, number one, or excuse Symphony Number 2, and then two Beethovens, one that we consider to be kind of an early Beethoven, one of the Opus 18s, and then one that we consider to be a middle Beethoven, the Opus 59, let me make sure I'm going to get this right, Number 1.
There you go. you know, one thing I think we should say about Diderot, though, is that when we talk about a quartet that's playing the meat and potatoes repertoire, using period instruments, they manage somehow, though, to make this really fresh. It feels new in their hands.
Yes, and it's a really interesting opportunity because all three of these pieces are pieces that, if you've listened to any chamber music or you know, you've been a fan of string quartets for any period of time, you've almost certainly heard these. But I'm going to guess that most of you have not heard them played on period instruments with historically informed performance. So it's kind of a neat window into the past of what Beethoven and Haydn would have actually heard.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen yourself the Diderot video with the flowers growing in slow motion?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's a great video.
Or I guess fast motion is really what it is, right? Yeah. There's another one too where I don't want to spoil the surprise, but they're playing Mozart and it's just like watching a music video for, you know, some pop band or something. And there's a few shots of just the players sitting outdoors somewhere, and then you see this shadow coming in from the side. So I would encourage everybody to.
Yeah, there's some cool some cool media on their website.
For sure. So when is your season finale concert, and who will be performing on the season finale after this particular concert? This is the one that has the special commission on it, right?
Yes. So our season finale concert, I'm afraid I don't have the date in front of me right now.
Sure, you got it.
Bob's going to throw something at me here. but our season finale concert will be a commission from Kurt Connect, actually, who was formerly a Nebraska resident, still a Nebraska boy in our hearts. It's a commission for 9 players, actually, which is an unusual configuration. All faculty at the School of Music here in Lincoln. And it's called Time and the River, and it will be set to to the Platte Basin time lapse with photography by Mike Farrell and Michael Forsberg.
So there's visuals along with it too.
Yes,
Bob Kuzelka just sat down at the table. Do you have a date for us, Bob? The date of the finale.
I heard the rehearsal or practice for yesterday in the School of Music, and it's really awesome.
Cool.
And also, I talked with the member of the Platte Basin Time Lapse Project that's doing the images. And so it'll be an interesting technical challenge, and Sophia's going to help us with it. But
all right.
But
yes.
It should be great. It's the 27th of April. It's a Saturday. It's at 7:30.
Yes, and that Kimble. One will be in Kimball, so not in our not in our regular digs. Diderot will be, of course, at the Johnny Carson Theater, where we have had our home for a few years now.
And we will make sure that there is a link on the Friday Live page as well. In fact, I know there's one there right now, so people can click through to all the details about this upcoming concert and the next one.
Excellent.
Right, and NET is going to record and do a live streaming of the 27th concert.
So there'll be even more ways to experience that newly commissioned piece. Well, Sophia Potter and, at the last minute, Bob Kuzelka,
thanks so
much for telling us what's going on with Lincoln Friends of Chamber Music. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Genevieve.
The Diderot String Quartet plays the second-to-last concert of the Lincoln Friends of Chamber Music season next Tuesday, April 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Johnny Carson Theater in the Lead Center in Lincoln. And for more information about this concert or anything that you hear about here on Friday Live, go to netnebraska.org/radio and find the Friday Live page. I'm Genevieve Randall. Next here on Friday Live, I'm joined by Krista Speed, who will conduct the Sandhill Symphony Orchestra in their next concert. The performance is Sunday at 3 p.m. at the North Platte High School Performing Arts Center. The concert is titled Passports to a World of Music. Krista, thanks for being a part of this week's Friday Live.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
The Sandhill Symphony has a couple of concerts per year, so you and I don't get to talk all that often. So let's review a little bit about this particular orchestra. Who are its members and where are they from?
This is a community orchestra. Musicians come from North Platte, Grant, Hershey, Imperial, Brule, Callaway, McCook, basically Western Nebraska. A few people from Central City are even going to play in the concert, this coming concert. It's a lot of people, all different ages. We have high school students playing all the way up to members, senior citizens, we'll say.
So what's the furthest distance that an orchestra member might drive to play with the group?
I think maybe Imperial or McCook.
That's a bit. So when you're preparing for a concert, those rehearsals are held over a series of weekends. Is that right?
We rehearse on Sunday afternoons, and we have about 5 or 6 rehearsals prior to the concert.
And for this Sunday's concert, what music have you prepared for that theme, Passports to a World of Music?
I love to travel, and there's such a variety of music from all over the world. So we're starting out the program with Handel's Music for the Royal Fireworks. We're going to travel to Norway, and we're playing the Amish March by Edvard Grieg. We're going to Austria for Radetzky. We're playing Albert Kettleby's In a Persian Market, Russian Sailor's Dance. We're doing a great piece called The First Movement of Estampus Mexicanus by Jose Elizondo. The first movement is called Serial. It's just a fun multimeter piece. And we are featuring two North Platte musicians, actually. Virgil French has arranged John Warrington's original Dixieland Concerto for a Dixieland ensemble made up of members of the orchestra. He's arranged it specially for the Sandhill Symphony. And another, I guess, premiere piece we are performing is called Variations for Danielle. It was written by North Platte native Kent Kittle, especially for the Sandhill Symphony.
Wow, how did that come about? A couple of special arrangements just for you guys.
Virgil French mentioned when I took over the orchestra that he had this piece that, and I said, well, sure, let's do it. That would be great. Little side note, I grew up in North Platte, and Virgil was actually my band instructor when I was in high school. So it's kind of fun to have him playing in the orchestra while I'm conducting. And then Kent Kittle had contacted me and said he wrote this piece, and I said, sure, let's do it. Kent was a retired piano tuner and instrument repair man, and he's been writing music, I think, all of his life. A kind of fun little side note that I just found out is that the Sandhill Symphony played its first concert in April in 1961, and Kent Kittle was actually a member of that orchestra at that time. He was a trombone player in the orchestra. So I think it's kind of fun to have a piece by him in the program.
He's been there almost kind of from the beginning then, I guess.
Exactly.
So Krista, after this next Sandhill Symphony Orchestra concert, what's ahead? What's the next thing? Do you start planning for the next one right away?
Probably. I'll take a little time off, and we'll just kind of see where next year brings the orchestra. But it's got a very dedicated group of musicians that play in the group. Some very fine players, and they're kind of a close-knit group. So it's been a really fun experience to go back and conduct this orchestra. I actually started out my musical career in North Platte growing up, and when I was in high school, I actually played in this orchestra, and so it is kind of fun to be back conducting now.
Krista Speed conducts the Sandhills Symphony Orchestra. Their next concert is Sunday at 3 p.m. It's free to attend, and there are refreshments afterward. The theme is Passports to a World of Music. And again, that concert is at the North Platte High School Performing Arts Center. Krista, thanks so much for telling us about the concert.
Thank you so much.
Serving your community anywhere that might be, NET Radio is Nebraska's public radio network. Online, netnebraska.org. To get what we want, it's sometimes difficult to know if we should push harder or if it would be best to pull back. This conflict is never more critical than when we debate how to work with the environment. A new book introduces two little-known scientists that held very different views on this subject. All About Books host Pat Leach reviewed it and took a lot from it.
I often describe myself as a total reading nerd. I'll read about anything if I find the writing compelling, and I found Mann's writing in this book very compelling. I'm not a scientist, and in parts of The Wizard and the Prophet, he digs deeply into scientific and technical descriptions. It took me 8 weeks or so to finish this book because I had to read it in the mornings as soon as I got up when my mind was fresh. It's been years since I felt I learned as much as I did from this book.
Hear a review of The Wizard and the Prophet by Charles C. Mann on this week's All About Books. It's online at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. This is Friday Live, and ahead we'll have highlights from our arts calendar, and in about 8 minutes we'll meet two Nebraska authors with recent books. The Bemis Center for Contemporary Arts in Omaha is celebrating the work of the Spring 2019 Artists in Residence and their new Curator in Residence this Saturday with an Open Studios event. So with us to chat about the event are Rodney Ewing, Artist in Residence, Sylvie Fortin, Curator in Residence, and Holly Cranker, Residency Program Manager. Thank you for being here today. I'm excited to learn more about the event.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
A full table all the way from Omaha.
That's right.
So the purpose of the event is for attendees to learn more about the current artists in residence. How many artists do you have this season?
Right. We have 9 artists in residence, and we have Sylvie joining us, who is our curator in residence, so a full house.
And for those who aren't familiar with those various jobs, so what's the difference between the artist program and the curator program?
Yeah, well, in a very brief description, the artists in residence are really at Bemis for making new work, exploring new methods and processes and time to really create, and Sylvie's creating in her own way as a curator by developing new ideas and doing a lot of research for preparations for exhibitions.
So who are some of the Spring 2019 artists along with our artists that we have here?
Right. Well, just, yeah, to name a few, we have Melanie McLean, Mark Villanova, J.C. Todd, Jess Fan, Adam Milner, Irini Miga, Cameron Granger, and Candace Friesen. So I think I got everybody.
And with such a large group of artists, I'm sure there's a wide range of different types of work on display. What kinds of things are these artists producing?
Yeah, we've got a lot of artists who are working sculpturally this session. We also have a poet in residence. So there's a wide range. We've got 2D artists like Rodney working in the spaces, so yeah.
2D artist. So, Rodney, tell us a little bit about your work and what kinds of things you create.
So I sort of go back and forth between works on paper and installation work. I'm sort of a topic-based artist, so I usually rely on the best method to communicate the ideas to the viewer. So,
and what are the topics that inspire you?
Since I've been here at Bemis, I've been working on a body of work called Longitude and Latitude, where I'm exploring topical events that sometimes fall between the lines of history, a lot of events that have happened to marginalized people, and just looking at different ways to put them in a context to reintroduce them to the general public.
And Sylvia, I'm curious to know a little bit about your job as well as curator, and especially for this event. So can you describe that a little bit for us?
Sure. Yeah, I'll be talking about the research that I'm doing here in Omaha, but more broadly, and kind of introducing the ideas around the show, my first show, which will be in November.
All right. And what kind of work do you do?
What kind of work? I write, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. I walk.
Yeah. Yes. Excellent.
And I make exhibitions.
Yeah, very good. So this is more than just an open house for attendees to walk around. What else is on the schedule for this event?
Yeah, so to kick off the day tomorrow at noon, we'll have all the artists in residence and Sylvie, our curator in residence, presenting really quick 5-minute introductions to their work as talks. And we also have an art activity, an all-ages art activity with Dr. Stacey Borellos, who will be showing how our participants how to create a tambourine with some unconventional items. And then the residents have all of their studios and workspaces open for guests to tour the facility and check out those studios and the work that they're making. And we also have our current exhibitions open.
So it sounds like a fun event for all ages.
Yes,
it is.
All ages welcome. Now, Rodney, for you as an artist, you know, a lot of artists are used to working sort of solitarily in many ways. Maybe there will be collaborations. How is it for you as an artist to have your work and your process on display and then to talk about your work to a gathering of people like this?
It seems pretty natural, part of the process to be able to explain your work and have the opportunity to explain your work. So, and yeah, there are days where the way things are at Bemis, where there'll be a couple days where I don't see anybody, you know, not even my next door neighbors. I might hear them, but I won't see them. But, but the opportunity to be able to stretch out and be able to, and Bemis is so generous, I'm able to stretch out between two rooms and do a body of work is something I really couldn't do in my regular practice.
Well, in addition to Rodney, who we've been talking about, you can meet the Bemis Center Artists in Residence this Saturday at the Open Studios event in Omaha. Galleries open at 11 a.m. and events run throughout the day, ending at 4 p.m. So telling us about the Open House Open Studios this morning, Rodney Ewing along with Sylvie Fortin and Holly Cranker. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Hope to see you Saturday.
And if you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and you wish that you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like online or download it. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. Genevieve Randall, you're listening to Friday Live on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here are some highlights. Tonight in Lincoln at the Zoo Bar, jazz and blues singer Annette Murrell will perform with Jim Williamson, keyboards. Nebraska's Queen of the Blues starts singing at 5 p.m. The Loft Community Theater in Manly presents Calendar Girls this weekend and next. Thursday, Friday, Saturday performances are at 7 p.m. and Sunday performances are at 2 p.m. And tomorrow in Holdridge, the Tassel Performing Arts Center hosts Cuban-Canadian artist and Grammy nominee Adonis Puentes and the Voice of Cuba Orchestra. That concert is at 7:30 p.m. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org. and support for programming comes from the Archway in Kearney, spanning I-80 at exit 275. The Archway presents a family-friendly exhibit that brings the American spirit of adventure to life. More at archway.org.
Listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. We'll learn about a visual arts mentorship program featured at Gallery 9 in Lincoln, and the Nebraska History Museum will host some performances as part of First Friday events. That's all still ahead. Right now, I'm joined by authors Bart Shaneman and Ted Genoese, who will be at Francie and Finch tomorrow from 4:30 to 5:30 for a book discussion and a signing. Ted Genoese is a journalist and author of this year's One Book, One Nebraska book. Bart Shaneman is also an author and journalist who lives in the Denver area. Previously, he's worked in California, South Korea, and was an assistant editor for the Scottsbluff Star-Herald, which we'll probably mention a little bit later. Previous books are The Green and the Gold, Travelogue, Trans-Siberian, and collection of essays and poetry, Someplace Else. His new novella is The Silence is the Noise. Bart Shaneman, welcome to Friday Live.
Thanks for having me.
And Ted Genoese, welcome back to Friday Live.
It's always great to be here.
So you'll both be at this event tomorrow. So Bart, you'll sign The Silence is the Noise, and Ted, you'll sign This Blessed Earth.
Definitely.
What makes each of your books a good pairing? How come you're doing this together?
Yeah, so one of the things that we have in common is that both books have a kind of a common theme, a thread of environmentalism in them. In Ted's book, the farm family that he follows for a year has, they were against the Keystone Pipeline. And the book that I wrote also kind of draws on some of my own personal experiences covering a fight in western Nebraska to stop a Colorado company from coming in and disposing of their fracking wastewater.
And so, yeah, you guys can kind of discuss the ways in which each of your books differently take an angle on environmental issues. Right. You know, Bart, I've read, as you can see from my bookmark here, most of the way through your book. It's physically a little thing, which is fun. But right off the bat, as a Nebraskan, I knew exactly what town Winterborne was sort of based on,
sure. In
a way, right? What's important about setting your story to you in Nebraska?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the place that I know the best. That's where I was born and raised. And in terms of, you know, having any authority as a writer, and, you know, for me, I really always enjoy literature that has a strong sense of place. And that's kind of what I was trying to evoke by writing, a story that was set in a place that I knew well.
Ethan Thomas is the main character.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that he talks as a character with friends about in the book, or thinks a lot about, is the value, I guess, of the place that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
The value of Winterborne, which is the town, right? Lucy in the book talks about leaving. There's moments when he's kind of thinking to himself that he hopes someone might not see him someplace, but yet he clearly loves it from the way he talks about it. I feel like that's something that's familiar to me, that sort of torn between feelings thing, but I'm not really sure why. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, in this story, the protagonist comes back to a town that he's from, and, you know, I think if anyone's listening out there that's ever done that, they know that that can be very complicated and difficult, and, you have strong memories and fond affection for the place where you were born and raised, but also it can be a whole different story to try to make a life there as an adult.
And Ted, I'd like to hear your thoughts a little bit about on that kind of subject too, because your book then follows a family working to hang on to this place that they've farmed for generations.
Yeah, well, I want to start by saying that this is one of the things that I think is just so appealing about Bart's work is that it isn't misty or sort of dewy-eyed about the realities of what things are like in rural Nebraska. I mean, it's a life that people feel committed to, and it's, I think, easy to become connected to that landscape and feel committed to that place. But it is complicated, and it is full of contradictions, and I think there's too much writing about that kind of place that tends to try to sort of gloss over those things or, you know, smooth those edges down a little bit. And, you know, what I'm always drawn to is the stuff that acknowledges some of the difficulties that are woven into it.
You know, Bart, I found a story that you wrote about the issue of disposing of fracking wastewater in Sioux County from about 4 years ago was the article that I found. And you mentioned that that's part of the book, too. But to me, really, it's not like the main focus of the book. It's more of a tool that you've kind of used to base this story around. What's feedback from readers been like so far? Do they ask you a lot of questions about the fracking wastewater disposal part of the book?
Well, yeah, I mean, most people that have asked me questions want to know, you know, if all those things actually really happened.
Yeah, right.
That's usually the first question.
I was kind of wondering that actually all the way along, right. Like how many things are based in something like what's going on, or how much of it is actual things you've experienced, or... Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say that it's fiction first, and not directly, representing anything that actually really happened, but inspired by some real life events, I guess.
Have you had, the two of you, discussions about that aspect then? Fiction being used to talk about these issues versus more of a documenting of, is what your book is about, Ted, documenting of a family farm. And especially since you're both journalists too, right?
I was just going to say, I mean, I'm fascinated by... Bart's ability to sort of construct a fictionalized story, because I have to say, I mean, I don't know if it's journalistic background or just sort of personality, but I find that, like, the hardest thing possible to just be sort of like, and then something
right.
I invented happened.
What am I inventing?
So, exactly. The possibilities seem too limitless, so that's the thing that I think is amazing, is to be able to find something that is both fictional but gets at recognizable truths.
Yeah, right. I mean, really, I think for me personally, reading recognizable truth is a really great way of putting it in your book. So I have a very specific question for you, Bart.
Uh-oh.
The target practice and setting the hay bale on fire, did that really happen?
That did not happen?
Oh, you made that up.
The target practice did. The end result didn't happen.
Well, I had to ask about it because my husband and I were discussing it for, like, you know, an afternoon. Like, silences would go by, like, did they really burn the hay bale? I don't know. Why would they really do that? So, yeah, it was kind of a funny discussion.
Sure.
Well, Bart Shaneman's book is The Silence is the Noise, and Ted Genoway's book, which is the One Book, One Nebraska book, is This Blessed Earth, A Year in the Life of an American Family Farm. Both authors will be at Francie and Finch Bookstore in downtown Lincoln tomorrow for a discussion and signing from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. Thanks for talking with me. I've enjoyed this kind of traversing between novel and non-fiction.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. here on Friday Live, an exhibition of work at the Nebraska History Museum is accompanied by jazz saxophone, more in about 10 minutes, and we'll learn about a visual arts mentor program. Next, I'm joined by Dick Morris with the St. Paul United Methodist Music and Art Series. It's First Friday today, and that means new artwork in Payne Parlor at St. Paul and a performance today at 1210 in the main sanctuary.
That's
great to
correct.
See you again, Dick.
Good to be here.
So there's a rather large group featured this month. Who is it?
It's the 45-voice Kentomas Women's Choir from Concordia College University, directed by Dr. Blersch.
Yes, Dr. Jeffrey Blersch leads Kentomas. What kind of music have they prepared? It's
evidently the whole spectrum of sacred music. That's all I know.
And in addition to the students from Concordia performing in that 45-voice choir, which yes. I think will fill the space nicely there at St. Paul, they're also contributing artwork for the month in Payne Parlor. Have you seen the work yet?
I haven't. I've not been well, so I've had to stay home. But I understand it's wonderful, some three-dimensional works, but it's all from the art department, and Concordia is always very cooperative when we have them.
Now, how many times do you think have you had Concordia cooperate with you on this series?
Almost every year.
Wow.
We may have missed one since I've been there.
And does this concert close out the season?
No.
No, there's one more. Okay, so what's ahead? Two more.
Next month, we'll have Bellissimo, the Audition Handbell Choir, with soloist Bob Snyder on percussion, me on the organ, and I believe a flutist, I'm not sure, along with that, yes.
All right, so we can look forward to hearing about two more performances after today's. And as always, for these concerts, the McKinley Bells are played by Nancy Shane.
And this week, it's going to be Brent Shaw. Nancy couldn't, so Brent Shaw is going to play them, yes.
Brent Shaw, who I've seen video of playing the bells at various places.
That's correct,
not limited to, but including St. Paul, and it's kind of amazing to watch the fists that you need to use. To play the bells. That will be heard from the church tower and in the sanctuary prior to the concert.
Yes.
Music starts at 12:10, and there is lunch before or after. The art by students from the art department of Concordia University up through the end of the month, correct?
That's correct, the whole month.
Well, Dick Morris, congratulations on a great season. We'll look forward to hearing about the last two concerts of music at St. Paul.
Thank you so much, Genevieve.
And always good to see you.
Good to be here.
The guest artist on the next Omaha Symphony concert performs a masterwork that's more of a symphony than a piano concerto. KVNO's Melissa Dundas has that story.
The orchestra writing is so sophisticated and it's so difficult, tricky for the orchestra, full of colors. It is really a symphony with piano obbligato. That's what people said. So the piano is a part of the orchestra.
That was guest artist Marcus Groh, who performs with Thomas Wilkins in the Omaha Symphony this weekend in Brahms's Piano Concerto No. 1, alongside music of Rachmaninoff and Miklos Rosa. From Stuttgart, Groh has a wide range of repertoire from Mozart and Haydn to Saint-Saëns and Messiaen. He also has a new album out today, featuring brand new music written by Danny Elfman. He was rehearsing with the symphony last night and missed the LA release party.
There is a kind of release party in LA, which I cannot attend, unfortunately, because I have a dress rehearsal here in Omaha. There's the violin concerto composed by Danny Elfman, and then his very first chamber music piece, what he wrote for me and members of the Berlin Philharmonic. And we had this on tour last year. We played it about 12, 13, 14 times, something like that. And people really loved it. And we were very happy that Danny agreed on recording it and putting it on the same CD as one of his first, let's say, traditionally classical chamber music pieces. And it's really wonderful how he worked with us. He's a very, very nice person and great knowledge of music. And it was really a pleasure. And I'm very happy that Sony Classical actually released this now.
Tonight, Groh will be performing the first piano concerto by Johannes Brahms and had a memorable story to share about his very first performance of it and how to work with the conductor.
Yes, I mean, there was one special encounter when I stepped in for André Watts, who just had a stroke the evening before. And I was asked to play the first concerto of Brahms the next day with Carl Sinclair, whom I didn't know personally. And there was actually no time for any additional rehearsal. So just a 1-hour meeting with Carl, and I said, well, I can do that crazy stuff because I know the piece really well. And then you have to react actually on stage, and you have to collaborate with a conductor and to see, okay, how's the orchestra going to work? So this is really something spectacular. Sometimes it creates a special tension, which it did. And usually you have a first rehearsal, a dress rehearsal, to come closer to the conductor's ideas and to get used to what you hear from the orchestra. But especially the Brahms Concerti, you cannot just play your part and say to the conductor, just follow me, it will be all right. This just doesn't work, because sometimes the main music is in the orchestra and you have just an accompaniment. And so it has to fit together. And I think the conductor's position is to hold everything together and to balance maybe between the soloist ideas and the orchestral possibilities or orchestral sound. So I think it's conductor is the main person in this game.
German pianist Marcus Gross solos for the second time with the Omaha Symphony led by Thomas Wilkins.
I love the hall. I mean, it's really the Holland Center. It is a great hall. And I just, when I posted this online, one of my friends said, oh my God, this is really great. Where is that? You know? And I said, yeah, that's in Omaha, Nebraska. So I think it's a really wonderful city with a wonderful hall. And also the orchestra, almost everybody recognized me, was very friendly. Oh, it's great to have you back here. And it's really a great atmosphere in town. People are very friendly and they're very open to collaboration.
Performances are tonight and tomorrow evening at 7:30 p.m. at the Holland Performing Arts Center. The concert also includes Miklos Rozsa's Madame Bovary Waltz and Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances. For tickets and more information, visit omahasymphony.org or call Ticket Omaha at 402-345-0606. For Friday Live, I'm Melissa Dundas.
I'm Genevieve Randall. Be sure to join us next week for a live broadcast from the NET studios. We'll have live music from four different Nebraska acts, including the Concordia University Handbell Choir, who are celebrating an anniversary this year. We'll also chat with Aubin Music, Nebraska author Carson Vaughn, and much more. Come enjoy some live performances at NET and be part of our live audience. Refreshments are at 8:30 a.m. and the show starts at 9 a.m. And as always, there's more information online on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org. Bit of a track from Ed Archibald, Omaha-based musician. The Nebraska History Museum will incorporate him in their first Friday event, and there's more to celebrate, a new exhibition called Black and White in Black and White, Images of Dignity, Hope, and Diversity in America, featuring photography by John Johnson. Joining me to talk about the exhibit are the museum's curator of education, Sharon Kennedy, Lincoln Lancaster County Historic Preservation Planner Ed Zimmer, and saxophonist, who we just heard, Ed Archibald. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Morning.
Good morning.
Nice to start off the interview with your music, Ed.
Yes, it's really an honor.
Well, thank you. So, Sharon, let's start with, before we get to the Eds here, it's almost self-explanatory in the title, but what is this exhibit about?
This exhibit is about photography in Lincoln in the 19-teens and 20s, focusing specifically on the African-American community. Just absolutely gorgeous photographs that really depict Lincoln.
And Ed Zimmer, who was John Johnson, and when was he taking these photographs?
Johnson was a Lincoln native. He was born in 1879. And from about 1910 till the mid-20s, he was taking photographs throughout the community, and lots of African-American images. Johnson was African-American himself. Also lots of his European-American compatriots, fellow workers at the post office. He was a very talented photographer who supported himself as a janitor, drayman, laborer, the occupations available to a African-American man in early 20th century Lincoln, but talented artist as well.
And when we're looking at these photos that he's made, what do we see? What do we learn about Lincoln or about culture as we're looking at his work?
I think we see a community we might not have experienced any other way. We see the people being portrayed and Johnson working together to create an image of a self-image, a self-portrait. And I see them as part of what's called the New Negro Movement at the time, by the people involved. The NAACP grew out of it. It was self-expression, people saying, we'll tell you who we are. We're not going to be defined by others. And their images of, as the title says, great dignity. It's also important we understand the circumstances in which these people lived in Lincoln, the discrimination they faced. You don't see the discrimination in the photos. You see strength and dignity and family, and those were all true as well. My research has been trying to provide some of the context and the background by knowing the people.
I've enjoyed seeing a couple of the Facebook posts of just a selection of the photo. How many photos are there in total in the complete exhibition?
There's between 20 and 30 on view on the walls, but we've also got other large collections that you can see digitally. So actually a large number.
A really large number. Now, Ed Archibald, you're playing as part of the first Friday events tonight between 5 and 7.
Yes.
I was reading in your bio that you have experience with jazz, which is clear from what we've heard, rhythm and blues, country, and classical music. So what music are you playing at the museum?
We'll be doing similar to what we heard earlier. So we call it sort of a jazz, but it's really kind of more, has a pop influence. And it's kind of a blending, if you will, of the genres.
Yeah. We heard a clip there from your album, Omaha State of Mind.
Yes.
And indeed, you have another gig tonight at 8:30 in Omaha after your Lincoln gig. What's the Omaha gig?
The Omaha gig is, there's a place there in downtown Omaha. It's actually called the Omaha Lounge. And there it's more of, not necessarily jazz, but it's more of rhythm and blues, R&B, and the guests come to have a more of a good time. They dance and so forth like that. So it's we do that every Friday from 8:30 till about 11:30 each Friday. Yeah.
Now, there's some other performances in addition to Ed Archibald's performing between 5 and 7. What are those?
Right. Well, I'll just mention Felicia Webster is part of the Humanities Nebraska Speakers Bureau, and she is sometimes called the mother of the spoken poetry in Omaha. So she is a poet, she's a performer, she sings. Very dynamic person. We're really looking forward to having her in the space responding to the photographs. You know, Felicia's all about love, and I think it's just really portrayed in these, and I think it's just going to be wonderful. We've also got tours by the Eureka Girls from the YWCA. They came by yesterday and got some training and are all ready to go. We've got the Mount Zion Baptist Mass Choir performing at 6 o'clock on the second floor. They'll also be in the space. I think that'll be really gorgeous. We know that Johnson photographed a lot of church groups, Sunday school groups, in front of the various churches in Lincoln, the Quinn Chapel, Mount Zion, Newman Methodist, and so on. So it's a great connection there. Granny Weaves will have soul food. Karen Keir, our curator of photography collection, will be talking about preserving your family photos. She'll have a table there for questions and answers. And so I think just a great night. Great night. I hope everyone can come.
And we can mention, Sharon, if you want, next week there's another new exhibit opening called Crafting Culture, Women and the Business of Textiles in Nebraska. What is that exhibit?
Right. That's a great collaboration with the university, the textile clothing,
it is.
You know what I mean, clothing merchandising, fashion merchandising, and the Asian Community and Cultural Center. It's It's textiles by refugee women, and it'll be paired with early women milliners and dressmakers in Nebraska. And yeah, the show's going up right now as we speak. It'll be opening Friday, again, 5 to 7.
Okay, Sharon Kennedy, Ed Zimmer, and Ed Archibald, thanks for telling us about new displays at the museum and tonight's first Friday events.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
The Nebraska History Museum's new exhibition of work by John Johnson is called Black and White in Black and White, Images of Dignity, Hope, and Diversity in America. This afternoon, starting at 5 p.m. at the museum at about 15th and P Streets in Lincoln, there is a First Friday event featuring the music of Ed Archibald, a spoken word performance by Felicia Webster, a performance by the Mount Zion Baptist Choir, and some soul food. And for more information about this or anything you hear about here, go to netnebraska.org/radio and find the Friday Live page. Informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming, this is NET Radio. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. Gallery 9, Professional Artists Affiliation's newest exhibit, just opened this Wednesday. This is their fourth exhibit this year and will feature artwork from the Lincoln Public Schools Visual Arts Mentor Program. Former Visual Arts Mentor Vonnie Sparks is here to tell us more about the new exhibit, along with Tina Spomer, who is the facilitator of the Visual Arts Mentor Program. Nice to have you both here.
Thank you.
Vonnie, can you tell us a little bit about, or Tina, you as well, jump in anytime. What is the Visual Art Mentor Program?
You go, Tina.
Yeah, I'll gladly take this. The Visual Art Mentor Program is a very unique and special program within Lincoln Public Schools. It is for the elementary level kids, so ages K through 5. And any student K through 5 who's interested in applying to the program can fill out an application and submit a portfolio. It's so adorable to see these portfolios come in from these really young kids. I mean, they really are amazing. And from there, then we select a handful to interview. So they come all dressed up and to an interview. And again, they're just amazing. They're passionate about their artwork. Just really great problem solvers, and creativity levels are out of the, I mean, it's just amazing. Anyway, once they're matched or accepted into the program, then they're matched with an art professional from the community, like Vonnie, and that mentor travels to their school, and they work for 2 hours a week on various art mediums and techniques.
How many students are currently enrolled in the program?
We currently have 30 students in the program.
That's a large number.
Yeah.
Vonnie, what's your experience been working with students like this?
I started doing it, we were just talking about it, maybe 15 years ago, and working with first graders through fifth graders and boys and girls both, and it's been really good for me as an artist, actually. It gives me a lot of ideas because these kids' brains are incredible when they get an idea and we get to create together. That's been personally great for me. But I love helping kids feel excited about art and teaching them about art that they wouldn't maybe know about just from school, and encouraging them to keep going with it. And I always hope that they all become artists. Of course they don't, but...
Now, let's talk a little bit about what age range of artists we'll see work from at Gallery 9.
I'm sorry.
Oh, the age range of the artists' work at Gallery 9.
Yeah, so again, K through 5.
Uh-huh. So yeah. Everybody from that range has been chosen.
Yes.
And how long have students been working then on curating the pieces for this particular display?
Most of the pieces exhibited tonight will be from this year, at some point this year. Yeah.
Are students able then to help kind of select the work that goes into the exhibition?
They do. They and their, and Bonnie can speak more to this, but they and their mentor communicate together and figure out what they want to do.
Right. Yeah, what's that process like for them? How did they?
Well, when I was mentoring, I'm not mentoring this year, but when I was in the past years, it's usually the mentor suggesting, but of course the kid's going to have their own ideas. And so what we have in the exhibit is a lot of 3D, like sculpture and found object sculpture, and there's paintings and there's drawings. And when I was mentoring, I felt I just wanted to show the best representation of the kids' talent. And sometimes that's not the kids' favorite piece. So they might choose to have something in the show that they love, and it's really their choice, I think, in the end. But you should see this show. It is so amazing.
Aww. Is there a particular piece that has stood out to you, maybe? Or pieces?
There are several pieces. There's a wonderful, is it a Tyrannosaurus?
Mm-hmm. Clay.
Yeah,
sculpture.
Gigantic, weighs about 1,000 pounds, and it's beautiful, and it's a little guy who, is he fifth grade, or, mm-hmm. Yeah. And really wonderful drawings, beautiful abstracts, and what's one of your favorite pieces?
Well, there's some amazing jewelry that right. some students have made. There's oil paintings, there's acrylic paintings, there's paper mache sculptures. I mean, you name it, we probably got it.
Now, from my understanding, there's an opening reception this evening
yes.
for First Friday. Will the young artists be there to meet attendees?
Usually the parents and the kids, and sometimes grandparents and aunts and uncles and everybody comes, and I'll be able to see a couple of my former students that I'm really excited about. And it's also, we haven't always done the exhibit in an art gallery that's like a sale gallery, like Gallery 9 is. So there will be other people there coming for First Friday that aren't just involved in the program. So these kids are going to have a chance to meet lots of artists, and we're going to have a lot of opportunity to learn, ask questions to the kids, which I love doing.
Yeah.
I like to hear them describe their work.
What was the original inspiration for having a mentor program like this? And then what are some outcomes that you see?
Yeah, exactly. It was just an area, I mean, you know how lots of times arts and arts programs tend to be underserved. And Lincoln Public Schools understood this. And so they really wanted to address that. And they thought, well, where do we start? There's great programs at the high school level, good programs at the middle school level. But, you know, beyond the 5-day rotation in the elementary level, what else can we offer? So it started as a grant through the Nebraska Lottery, and was seen as such a valuable program, then it was just adopted into the budget.
Well, the exhibition featuring Lincoln Public Schools Visual Arts Mentor Program will be running until April 28th there at Gallery 9 in downtown Lincoln. That opening reception is tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Thank you, Vonnie Sparks, for sharing more about the program, as well as Tina Spomer, who is the facilitator for the Visual Arts Mentor Program. Pleasure talking with both of you.
Thank you.
Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black and Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Elise Stastny, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Sheldon Museum of Art, presenting Stuart Davis, An American in Paris, a lecture by art critic and curator Karen Wilkin. The talk focuses on one of Sheldon's best-known works, Arch Hotel, created by painter Stuart Davis while living in Paris in the 1920s, Thursday, April 11th at 6 p.m. To learn more, SheldonArtMuseum.org. Also, support comes from Contemplate Lincoln, a nonprofit Christian contemplative center whose mission is to be transformational, authentic, faithful, and life-giving. Located at 31st and P Streets in Lincoln and on the web at contemplatelincoln.org. And Union Bank. Locally owned with a commitment to lasting customer relationships, Union Bank offers customers personal and business banking, as well as wealth management services. Union Bank, member FDIC.